I masturbate myself to an unsatisfying climax, then cower for a while in a corner of the bed. Finally, afraid to risk the demons of sleep, I go back to plotting trajectories and flight budgets to Callisto. It's obvious why Jeeves wanted me now. Once the Block II reflexes take hold, I'll be just like Juliet in every way but one. Unlike her, I'm unspoiled. I spend a frustrating couple of hours trying to juggle flight times, departure schedules, and ticket prices before I remember the letters I collected before my old identity was liquidated. I lean back on the bed, looking out the window at the landscape, dimly lit by the scudding arc lamp of Phobos, and open the first message. It's from one of the Jeeveses. I'm not sure which one, or even whether it's a Jeeves that Juliet has met and I haven't. There's self-effacing, and then there's this cult of interchangeability that Jeeves Co. seems to impose upon its partners. When I stop to think about it, it's quite disturbing, as if Rhea had decided to set up a corporation and hire us all on condition we gave up our individuality and pretended to be her in public. It's an audio-only message, of course. Why am I unsurprised at such a traditional mannerism? Greetings, Freya. By now you are probably aware that an adverse situation is developing. To summarize, over the past few years we have become aware that a consortium of black laboratories, the so-called Sleepless Cartel, are attempting to construct a suite of green and pink goo nano-replicators capable of supporting a fully functional creator. This is a huge undertaking, and labs all over the solar system have been feeding into it. Various consortia of aristos, most notably the collective known as the Black Talon, are extremely interested. The article you couriered from Mercury to Mars was a working example of an avian organism, proof of that particular lab's bona fides, with furthermore creator DNA sequences expressed in it. Whether they can fabricate a living Homo sapiens from scratch is questionable, but we fear the worst. Jeeves Corporation works with various interested parties who are not on friendly terms with the Aristo-dominated factions and who are not in favor of permitting the manufacture of H-sapien specimens at this time, especially given their propensity for autonomous reproduction. The Black Talon optimistically believe that they can manipulate their synthetic master once they have acquired him. We think they're misguided at best. At worst, one would not consider the phrase bringing about the downfall of civilization to be an exaggeration of the potential damage a rogue creator could cause. One has, however, been hampered in one's work by a series of setbacks. It appears that at least one opposition faction has succeeded in penetrating our organization, either by suborning one of the junior partners or by inserting spies in the shape of a trusted employee. We are not sure of the mole's identity, but we are certain that you are not implicated. Neither was Juliet. One should add, she herself sent word of her own death and a corrupted soul chip some years ago, when she first started working undercover for me. It was only after the decision was made to try to recruit you back on Venus that Dax replaced the dummy chip in your graveyard with the real one that Juliet contributed. After Juliet's first chip was dispatched, we ran into difficulties. Certain events on Mars affected Juliet's willingness to cooperate subsequently. Dax should have given you a copy of her most recent available soul chip, which we obtained without her knowledge. You may find the memories contained therein traumatic, but we believe reviewing them will help you maintain your own sense of purpose through the dark times ahead. It was taken less than a year ago, after her last disastrous mission shortly before she fled. If you see her, please remember, it's not her fault. She's likely to behave irrationally in ways that are highly detrimental to our corporate and your personal interests, but we bear her no ill will. It was an unfortunate accident, and could have happened to anyone. We will help her if we can. Therapy is available. But you must be aware that she can betray us to the Black Talon, and you should behave with appropriate caution if you meet her. I swallow. Coming so soon after that disturbing memory dream, Jeeves's candid explanation is like a slap in the face. I suppose I should have realized that Jeeves's activities weren't simply illegal, but verged on the political. But to have it rubbed in so blatantly is distressing. Stay out of politics is one of the oldest and deepest of Rhea's injunctions. Politics is shit. It corrupts everything it touches, and getting involved in it only leads to misery and dissatisfaction. I've been gulled and manipulated into a conspiracy. Worse still, one that appears to be directed against the return of my dead love's kind. And worst of all, there's no obvious way out, because damn him, Jeeves is right. Slavery by override chip is bad enough. Having a lineage of self-replicating pseudo-aristas running around who can do that to us just by crooking a little finger doesn't bear thinking about. I push on and try to take in the rest of Jeeves's message. I know from experience that if I stop here, in the middle of the bad news, I won't want to continue. It would be sensible of you to continue trying to integrate Juliet's most recent soul. You will need to be able to draw on her resources, but we hope you will take her sad fate as a warning. Loss of self-control is more than a mere personal failing, and her loss of self-control will be yours if the conspirators succeed in obtaining a creator race specimen. In other news, we have taken the liberty of booking passage for you aboard the Indefatigable, which departs for Jupiter system in 2 weeks' time on a fast hyperbolic trajectory. The voyage will take less than one standard year. Your tickets will arrive shortly under separate cover, along with some advice on your cover identity. The Honourable Catherine Sorico is covered for first-class accommodation, but facilities on the Indefatigable are somewhat Spartan, and we would not think any the worse of you should you choose to spend the largest part of the journey in hibernation. On arrival, you may proceed directly to the Public Jeeves Corporation office, where the Jeeves in residence will continue your briefing. Meanwhile, between now and your departure date, we have some additional minor errands to keep you busy. First of all, if you would be so good as to retrieve a small package from the office of the Green Diamond Import-Export Corporation on the corner of Hilbertstrasse and Morgensternplatz in Van Braun. They are expecting you by name, and personally deliver it into the hands of... His instructions continue in interminable detail. I check my mail queue, and sure enough, there are a couple of other messages from Jeeves. One that consists of a list of places and times, and one with a detailed travel itinerary and ticket references attached. "Dax, you idiot," I mutter aloud. Then I settle down to studying my assignments. At last I've got something to busy myself with, even if it's only for a few days. I can worry about the big picture later, when there's nothing better to do. Controlling interest. Later, as Freya, I deep sleep again while my technique continues to make repairs and roll back Ferd's hasty changes. I'm slowly reverting to the deeply embedded body plan that Dr. Murgatroyd created for me on Mercury. The subcutaneous scars are healing, setting me back in the semblance of Catherine Sorico. I've got to admit that even though the Bishojo features feel strained, I've become more used to them than any of the other disguises I've worn. Meanwhile, I dream that I'm Juliet. I'm drowsing in Pete's arms, naked on a bed of fallen leaves in a green-roofed hothouse on Mars. We're aslime with each other's secretions, elated and tired and in love. And I want the moment to last forever. I'm not stupid. I know I need to make my excuses and my escape. I shouldn't be here, and every second I stay risks disaster. This is all a terrible mistake. It could jeopardize everything we've been working toward. But I'm torn. I want to hang on to him forever, to feel him with me always, and I'm determined not to lose him. But in the short term... We could elope together, I murmur. I'd love to. He nuzzles my earlobe and I close my eyes. I want to be with you for eternity. Well then, I begin to pull away, thinking to sit up. Why don't we? It's hard to concentrate while he's around. My lady is a jealous employer. If she thinks I'm disloyal... But she's only your employer. She doesn't own you. Does she? A sudden stab of fear ripples through me. Maybe I could buy him off her. But that's a stupid thought. I know myself too well to think it could work. He touches a fingertip lightly on my lips. It seems only natural to kiss it, and that leads to another interruption. For some reason, I just can't help myself. Presently, however, he continues, even as I nuzzle at the base of his throat. She's much more dangerous than you realize, my dear. She doesn't own me, that's true, but she could if she wanted to. Dashed knobs have the money and the corporate structure to sue me, or sue you, and keep us hogtied in court until we burn through our capital and lapse into bankruptcy. Please, don't risk it. I'll find a way to get away as soon as I can. You'll see. I just need to make her think that shedding me is her own idea. Once I'm free, I'll come to you. I don't want to wait. Trying to think is so frustrating. We could leave now. I've got a spider. I know where to get you a new identity. I do want to be with you. But you underestimate me, lady. There's a sudden draft of chilly outside air as the door swings open. Well, how absolutely fascinating. I turn around as Pete sits up beside me. I was showing her the orchids, he said, stuttering faintly. He's got creator biomimicry too. He flushes when he's embarrassed. Eliza Lynch, the Grand Lady of Paraguay, or her present-day impersonator, is distinctly unimpressed. She stands in the doorway, antique peacock feather headdress nodding against the ceiling, and if looks could kill, the venom squeezing out of her blackly gleaming Bishojo orbs in our direction would be enough to poison a city. I'll deal with you later, she says coldly, and turns her head minutely to stare at me. As for you, making free with my chattels! I roll to my feet, skin hardening into defensive scales, but her bodyguards are already between us, dwarfish black-clad sadists, tittering as they unsheath their power maces. I don't answer to you, I throw in her face. Let's make this a matter of honor. It's sheer bravado. I'm genuinely afraid, my skin flushed and shivery. It's bad enough that she's on the verge of wigging out completely and ordering her arbiter thugs to kill me, not to mention wrecking all my carefully laid long-term plans. But that's trivial compared to the gaping horror that is the prospect of losing Pete so soon after I've found him. And a sidelong glance shows me that I might be losing him already. He's cringing away from my suddenly changing form. The love between us that burns so bright was sustained by our mutual pheromonal feedback. If I stand too far away to smell, will he reject me? But she doesn't seem to realize it's a bluff. A sudden upward jerk of her chin. I know who you claim to be. Catherine Sorico. And I know what you are. Imposter! She adds for the benefit of the peanut gallery. Get out of my house before I lose my temper, whelp! I gape. She is letting me go. I move to pick up my clothes, but she shakes her head, and there's a guard standing before me, weapon raised. Don't push your luck. I take a step back. She glides forward into the greenhouse, and her guards circle with her, forcing me to retreat through the open doorway. Her face warps in a distorted smile. I've got what you want, child. If you come back without my permission, I'll break him in front of you. And then I'll break you. Just remember that. Now get out before I change my mind. Her smile turns ugly. Remember, I know what you're made of, Juliet. I stumble out into the maze, seething with anger and humiliation, dread, and a terrible new emotion I can't quite name. The mission is a wash, but I have a new goal now. The only problem is, I'm not sure if it's one I can achieve. After I wake, shuddering from that dream, sleeping is pretty much impossible. I feel stupid and tired. Am I going to need yet more cosmetic surgery? Certainly my current disguise is useless. And why didn't Juliet tell Jeeves that the Catherine Sorico identity was blown? Or did she? A paranoid corner of me wonders. At least now I know why Stone and the Domino are after me. It was simply my bad luck she was on Venus, and he tagged me as Juliet's kind. It's so like an Aristo to send her rival a message written in the dead flesh of an innocent Sib. And as for the events aboard Pygmalion, I flash on a memory of the Domina, Pete's owner. I'm certain now that she's one of Granita's Sibs. They're too much alike for it to be a coincidence. Granita, who casually seduced me in body, if not soul, then ordered her minions to fire on my presumed location? I twitch. What have I stumbled into? If Granita has told her sister, the Domina, that she met Catherine Sorico on a Mars-bound liner, and they successfully tagged me as Maria Montes Guar, then... Why does Jeeves want me to run errands for weeks, until the indefatigable is ready to leave, using a blown cover identity? I'm pacing around the bedroom like a clockwork toy, chewing on a knuckle as I think furiously. I don't like the shape of this. I mean, I really don't like it. If I was a nasty, paranoid person like Juliet, I'd think Jeeves was trying to set me up. Having me charge around all over my enemy's home territory, looking very much like the Sib she swore vengeance on? That's not funny. But what's in it for Jeeves? I can't see any reason why he'd want me dead. If so, why the elaborate setup? And who's trying to sue me into a hole in the ground and establish a claim on my body? He's using me as bait. Or he's the mole in the organization. Neither prospect is reassuring. But I need that ticket out to Jupiter, don't I? If I head back to, say, Earth, there's no telling which of the Domina's Sibs will run across me next, or which of their bodyguards, the flamboyant Aristo thugs or the munchkin space ninjas she leans toward. I've done surprisingly well to stay alive so far, but mostly because I've had help. If I cut and run on Jeeves, I might not be so lucky next time. I sit down on the bed and think furiously. Can I do it without exposing myself? I summon up Jeeves's letter and read it again. Then I double-check the travel itinerary. He wants me to run some errands around places as far apart as Carter City and Lowell and... Yes, one of me thinks. This could work. And so I begin to plot. The next day, Good Time Kate checks out of the decrepit hotel and hops aboard a slow southbound train. The train makes numerous stops en route to the destination she paid for, near the south polar city of Bougainville. She's no longer aboard by that point. Maria Montes Qua, who is presumably on several watch lists, boards a suborbital to Fashoda, a maglev to Maxwell, and a train to Tribeca. I do none of these things, and in fact buy a battered third-hand spider with money from the wallet of Jennifer Sixt, one of the flimsier of Jeeves's courier identities. Did I say that Mars is big? 3 days later, exhausted and sleepless and with every joint in my body shaken half loose from the off-road driving, I ride my spider into the outskirts of Hellesport, nearly 3,000 kilometers from where I bought the craft. I've had lots of time to think and brood and read and reread my instructions from Jeeves, and I've decided that if he wants cages rattling, then I'm going to really make them rattle, but not at the price of letting myself fall into the Domino's hands. I've done my research from a battered gazetteer, and it doesn't take me long to locate the correct backstreet market. Rows of kiosks and dingy shop fronts, jostling elbow to elbow with power distribution substations and vendors of assorted substances. I walk in, rather than taking the spider. What I'm looking for is slightly upmarket from Ferd's Dive in the back streets of Marsport, but otherwise not dissimilar. The waiting room is painted black and sparsely furnished, the better to highlight the display of limbs, heads, torsos, and structural boning that adorns the walls and ceiling. All the organs are embellished with the surgeon engineer's signature. The location is cheap and nasty, but word is that Red spends her profit on her practice, not on a fancy paint job. "Anyone here?" I call, sitting down on a bench seat with remarkably lifelike feet. A munchkin pops out of a hole in the floor and chatters at me angrily.
"What do you want? Red not in."
"I'm wanting to give Red some money," I say calmly enough. "If he's not in, tough." I stand up, ready to go, just as the inner door opens. "Hello." "Pay no attention to Zaya. He gets possessive." She looks me up and down with a professional eye. "What do you need?" I toss her a memory stick. "What's on there? I think it'll take you a while to arrange everything, yes?" She pops it into her arm and glances at the palm of her hand. "You're not joking. Cold weather kit's easy enough. But radiation hardening? What are you planning? A skiing holiday on Pluto? Or maybe you're taking a job supervising a reactor plant?" "Close enough," I say lightly. "Can you do it?" is the question. She keeps reading. I see the point where she pauses, does a double take, and continues. "Expensive. Some of this is going to be difficult to get hold of." I'm pretty sure she's thinking of the Block 2 requirements, the added tech need to bring me up to the same spec as my secretive sister. "The cryo-tolerant kit isn't exotic, just not particularly common. It's the other stuff that may be problematic. It's going to attract attention," she says apologetically. "I was thinking 12,000 reals ought to cover it," I say carefully. "That's about 30% over the odds." She stares at me, unblinking. 15,000. 14. 15, and not a dollar or a centime less." She pauses. "I'll need the money to grease some joints. Getting some of these subsystems without anyone noticing officially..." She shrugs. "I assume that's what you want." I nod. "All right. Deal." I spend roughly the next week in and out of Red's chop shop, being prodded and poked. Most of it isn't too bad. but I'm extremely unhappy about remaining conscious when it's time for her to crack my thighs open and replace their fab lines with new assembler arrays. Also, having all the joints in my body realigned and re-socketed is tedious in the extreme, and occasionally agonizing when she misplaces a pain block, which, to be fair, isn't her speciality. When she's through with me, I don't look very different on the outside. I've got the same Bishojo eyes and feathery blonde hair I've been wearing since Mercury, the same too perky nipples and narrow waist as the original Catherine Sorico and my sister Juliet, the impersonator. But internally, there have been some big changes. I won't freeze until you get right down to liquid nitrogen temperature, and given appropriate footwear and clothing, I can go singing in the methane rain on Titan. My marotechny is able to fix a whole lot more radiation damage than I hope I'll ever be exposed to. And there are some other surprises, like the distributed reflex net Red has spliced into my peripheral nervous system. Its responses are dumb and stereotyped, but if someone's sneaking up behind me with a knife, that's all I need. I'll leave the fancy disarming techniques to Juliet's reflex set when it fully imprints on me. In the meantime, I'm becoming Kate. Hair trigger splitter of skulls and ice-cool, frigid bitch. There comes a morning when Red looks in on me.
Oh, still here?
She makes shooing gestures. Go on, get out. I'm not running a hostel. I thought you still wanted to fine-tune my...
Nope.
She doesn't smile. I took the air conditioning down to -120 while you were sleeping overnight. There are no hot spots, so you're ready to check out.
Oh, I say, slightly crestfallen. Well, thanks.
And I pick up my coat and walk out of her body shop.
For good, I hope.
It's time to go to work. 2 days and 3 deliveries later, I get my first actual evidence of who Jeeves is trying to draw out. Not that I didn't have a list of suspects already, but the first rule in both of the 2 oldest professions is, don't make assumptions. The work is mostly trivial stuff. Go to venue Alpha without being tracked, accost person Bravo and give recognition sign Charlie, accept payload Delta, proceed without being tracked to venue Echo, locate person Foxtrot, and complete. There's a rhythm to it. It's a soft shoe shuffle of a job. And it's singing in my nerves as I hop transport routes, change outerwear and the more easily adjustable physical signifiers, touch base and dance on. Really, I'm not doing anything a million other couriers couldn't do. I'm just trying to be as discreet as a giantess half as tall again as the average citizen can be. Which is to say, not very. I collect the 4th item, an encrypted soul chip. What a surprise! From a shebeen in the Warrens under Metropolis. And check the delivery instructions on a local classified ads bulletin board. And that's when I get the first shiver down the spine. The destination's in Hellesport, the railhead town in the Helles Basin that's the closest city to her estate. I've been there before. Or Juliet has. And the delivery instructions? Even creepier. I'm to go to the Riesling Hotel, check in under false identity number 4, and hand the stick over to Petruchio. A name that I promptly go and look up and that tells me nothing, except that the hairs on the back of my neck are standing on end. Oh my, I think. My own response takes me by surprise. Can you catch love by proxy? I suddenly realize that I'm anxious to see this Petruchio, for entirely unprofessional reasons. And that's a far more unwelcome revelation than even the worst possible answer to the questions about Jeeves's motivation that I've been asking. There are layers of game being played above my head, that is true. But it's up to me to look to my own self-preservation. That's why I hung on to the Swiss Army handgun, and make sure I don't sleep in the same room 2 nights running. Hellesport is over 500 kilometers away, and I'm still running a day behind schedule.
There's, I check the assignment, a time window attached to this delivery. I've only got 6 hours to make it. I didn't notice it was time critical earlier. I swear at myself, do a hasty twice round the block to check for tails, then dive onto the overhead suspended tramway and make my way to the railway station. Luckily for me, there's an express leaving in less than an hour. I buy a second-class seat on it, then dive into the concourse to grab my travel kit from left luggage. Second class is for respectable working independents who have to carry their own stuff and can't simply order new or send a slave to buy it at the other end. Even though I've got a strong suspicion that I'm bait in a trap, I can't resist this one. Because if Petruchio is who I think he is, it'll help me get a handle on the unsettled feelings Juliet has inflicted on me. I try not to tap my fingers on the tabletop as the train finally pulls out of the station. Express can cover a multitude of sins on Mars, and there's nothing terribly speedy about this behemoth. It just rumbles along steadily without stopping between major cities. What if he is Pete? I daydream. Bad Freya, bad. I can almost feel his maddening, tantalizing, ghostly fingertips running across my skin. I shiver. How do I avoid succumbing when just thinking about him raises second-hand memories of his incubus touch? Spong! I shudder and cup my left breast with one hand, feeling dampness. I glance around, mortified. Luckily, I'm alone in this compartment, so there's no one to witness my embarrassment. My left nipple hasn't been quite right ever since that fly-by-night toast-wit furred overfilled it. Arousal was supposed to make it firm up. Now it triggers an emergency pressure release valve, and I end up oozing hydraulic fluid. It's really disgusting. Arousal? I'm having some difficulty sitting still. This is going to be bad, I mumble to myself as I massage my malfunctioning mammary. There must be something I can do. Then it hits me. What happened to Juliet wasn't the standard obedience reflex everyone feels in the presence of a master. It was the more specialized submission reflex, locking onto her actual designated personal owner. We were trained for service in two modes. And while we are normally open and eager for affection, when one of them chooses one of us and acquires ownership, we have no option but to love them exclusively. I remember Rhea learning to her surprise and chagrin about this mode. In the abstract, though, because as template matriarch for the lineage, her teachers couldn't risk exposing her to premature love.